Wednesday Night Rugby on Off The Ball.
Gerry Thornley of the Irish Times here in studio. Hello.
Good evening, Joe.
You're very welcome.
You?
Good, thank you. Thanks for coming in.
Keith, it's very red in here tonight, isn't it?
It's a new background, actually. Yeah. And Keith Wood is on the line. Evening, Keith.
Hi, Joe. Hi, Gerry.
Good evening, Keith.
So we're up and running really now, it feels like, Gerry, this season. I mean, we've had the opening months, which are slow, to say the least. We've seen the Lions reintegration into their various provincial sides. And suddenly we've got some interpros to look forward to. We've got Ulster Connacht in Kingspan at 7.35 Friday evening. And then 2 o'clock, Aviva Stadium, Leinster versus Munster. Leo Cullen promises me there'll be full strength sides and it'll be blood and thunder. So, yeah, the kind of holding pattern of the last couple of weeks, realistically, is over.
It's always the same.
Yeah.
This kick starts the season. The first Interpro derbies. Is it 46,000 tickets, I think, sold for the Aviva on Saturday, despite the early kickoff? Europe coming a week later, so it's the perfect way of really kind of fast-tracking their preparations for Europe as well as being marvellous occasions in their own right. Is there a rivalry or a derby quite like Leinster and Munster in the whole world? Like, when you think of their average attendance for the last 10 years or so, it's quite remarkable. And it's a great fixture to look forward to.
Which is why I hope they don't dilute it any further. And, you know, we saw the Christmas interpros and, you know, it was noticeable that Leo Cullen went out of his way to say there'll be good, strong sides here on the show today.
This was in response to the idea that Razzy Erasmus might kind of rotate his squad with one eye in Europe, to which Leo Cullen broadly chuckled. One would expect that there will be all 8 Irish Lions test players will be on view on Saturday, which is quite, after their summer achievements, is going to be quite something to look forward to, on the premise that Robbie Henshaw should come back this week and join Sean O'Brien, Jack McGrath, Tyke Furlan, Johnny Sexton, and then you've got Conor Murray, CJ Stander and Peter O'Mahony. And you saw the influence those players had, particularly the Munster trio last Saturday against Cardiff. They're just such important players and they transformed their size. They really are their best players. It's why they're test Lions, and it'll be full on. It's really going to, it just ramps up the season, it just kickstarts the season. And it's always been that way, Joe.
Yeah. Keith, you want the frontline players playing in these games, don't you? Not just because of for the fans' sake, but to kick things off properly on the right note ahead of European opposition, kick into gear. There's no value in resting your best players a week out from Europe at this stage of the season, or is there?
No, there isn't. And particularly not this season, I would say, in the manner in which, you know, players are coming back in after summer tours and the Lions and from Ireland, that they're only coming back into it. You don't want to have one game and then a break and then another game. You know, it's you need to get up to that level of contact and aggression that's needed that really only a game can give. And, you know, you don't want to get to the point of where the rivalry between Leinster and Munster is the be-all and end-all, and that it damages some of the players for the coming weeks. But I don't think it is that. I don't think the level of focus has been brilliant in some of those games. Last year was a little bit out in terms of it, but in the previous years the standard was great. The players on show were the frontline guys. It means an awful lot. And, you know, Gerry's point of it being such a big derby game, it's an incredible derby game. You know, to have 46,000 at it, or if it was down in Thomond Park, you'd have 28,000 or whatever the full maximum of Thomond Park is. You know, to have those sort of turnouts for games is extraordinary in world rugby, no mind club rugby. And I think when you keep looking time after time at the attendance figures that we see over in the UK at 8,000, 9,000, 7,000, you know, 12,000, and we kind of bemoan the fact sometimes that we don't have full sellouts at some of our games. The amount of people that turn up to watch the rugby in Ireland compared to the UK is incredible.
Yeah. And your point there about getting up to speed regarding full contact, from your own day or from what you know talking to players now, full contact in training, how often might that happen, and still how far away is it from what you're going to get at the Aviva on Saturday?
Well, in my day, which sounds like such a long, long time ago, and even as you know, we did far too much contact, without a shadow of a doubt. And it tried to taper off towards the end of my career, where the training sessions weren't too long. But we had some training sessions that were two and a half hours long. Take you a week to recover from that. The mind to get you ready for a match on the Saturday. And by the end of my career, that had been toned down an awful lot. Now it seems to be toned down even more. And just to make certain that the high level of intensity is that high, because it exacts a toll. And I think it is important to try and get that balance right, so that the players are battle hardened when they go and play. But on the same token, you want to be fresh, but you want to not take an extra second to deal with a thud. You know, it needs to be fully instinctive. And I think a couple of games under the belt makes that happen.
Yeah. So, Jerry, I know you watched Leinster beat Edinburgh on Friday, 21-13. The returning Lions were there. I think Johnny Sexton got man of the match. I was reading as well. I didn't see much of this game. The general reports were a bit sloppy. Owen Redden was on the show on Monday, said, very understandably so. He was saying if he was a player back in his day watching this game, he would have been so frustrated and agitated all weekend because everybody was just a little bit off and a little bit out of sync, and they're horrible games to stew over. But they're completely par for the course at this stage of the year, so he's not remotely worried. What did you make of it?
Wasn't really that surprised because a lot of the squad had only returned from South Africa the preceding Monday, so they might have had a full training session on Tuesday. Tuesday's their big day. Wednesday might have been a day off, another session Thursday. So they wouldn't have had an awful lot of time together. You'd four high quality players in the ones I mentioned earlier, bar Robbie Henshaw, all making their first appearances since June. Yeah. And they looked exactly what they are, quality players having their first game of the season, who will assuredly get better. Personally, I thought Johnny Sexton showed some lovely touches, you know, some really good vision at times, but I probably would have given it to Sean Cronin for his surges in open play, and Joey Carberry just for his footwork and his class. For me, Leinster missed 25 first up tackles. I thought their first up tackling was just not good enough, and they'll know that better than I do. And the amount of times they got within 10 metres of the opposition line and just went one off, it was surprising to see. When you think back to how potent they were last season, how varied they were in their attacking game, and they were the leading try scorers across Europe in both the European competition and in the Pro 14. And I think that bearing all that in mind, had they scored early in the second half, it would have been a lot like the Munster game. I think they might have pulled away. But they didn't, and I still would expect them to improve a lot. I think there's a huge amount of quality there. Leinster supporters are probably a little bit worried because they haven't scaled the heights of last season yet, but I think given time, they might well do. You know what I mean? Yeah. I think they'll benefit enormously from that game. I'll tell you what's really good for them as well, Joe. They've got two Saturday games in a row at home. They will just love the settled routine and schedule that. Keith will verify this. It's just so difficult when you're having 6-day turnarounds, or you're having trips abroad to South Africa, come back in the middle of the season, that's a new one, or, you know, an 8-day turnaround. It's just nice to have two home games, and they're going to need them because these are massive games that could really kickstart their season. Munster, you know, age-old rivalries, and then Montpellier are flying high atop the top 14 under Vern Cotter. They brought in Aaron Cruden and Ruan Pienaar and Louis Picamoles. What an 8-9-10 that is. And they are destroying teams. They put 57 points in Brieve at the weekend. I watched them. They're going to be an altogether different proposition than they were a year ago. So I think it's perfect prep for Europe, as well as being a massively important 4 points. And of course, the most interesting spectator of all will be Joe Schmidt and his fellow coaches, because it has such a bearing on the November internationals.
Yeah, Keith, I know you watched Munster beat Cardiff and pull away from them in the second half, and they had O'Mahony back and Stander back and Conor Murray back, and JJ Hanrahan came off the bench and made a nice impact as well. The early signs on Munster?
Yeah, I looked at that game. I can't get away from the fact, one point that Jerry said, that it does take, you know, over a month for the season to fully bed in, you know, that you want to try and get through that period of time without losing too many matches. But it's very hard to be firing on all cylinders. And you know, I looked at it last week, and again, like Leinster, and I saw the highlights of Leinster, that it just took them and some of their players coming back a period of time to settle into it. Not just them, actually, but some of the other players that have been playing, because they're just slightly out of kilter, out of timing. So that leads to bits of sloppy play and elements of that. I thought Munster first half was solid but not spectacular, and then they just absolutely ramped up the game in the second half. I mean, the sin binning made a huge difference, but it should have been 10 minutes earlier, to be honest. But they totally ramped up the game. But there seems to be almost two tiers in the Pro 12, Pro 14 at the moment. I mean, Leinster, Munster, Glasgow and Scarlets, maybe Ulster there, and Connacht from time to time reach those heights. But when those teams play against each other, all the problems a team have are exposed far sooner, far more readily. Whereas if those teams are playing against the other teams, for the most part, they can get away without playing at 100%. They can get themselves into those games and finish them off in the last 20 minutes. And I think we saw a bit of that at the weekend. So I don't think Leinster were anywhere near the top of the game, Munster neither. And yet they were still able to go and get the win. However, not particularly pretty from Leinster's case, but you know, Munster scored some great tries. And JJ Hanrahan, I have to say, I don't know whether you noticed this or not, Jerry, but for me, he looks like he shed a bit of weight. He looked...
Showed some pace for one of his tries, all right.
Well, he did, but it wasn't even that. He looked incredibly well balanced. What I was interested in, there was two things that really stuck out for me, was that he seemed to be at an awful lot of the breakdowns after he came on. He ran really, really good support lines, positive lines, which I like a lot. And I thought Rory Scannell is the most underrated player we have at the moment. And his little offload for the try, for JJ's first try, was just deft and beautiful. And we'd be extolling the virtues if it was an All Black. And this is a fairly unflashy centre who ran a really good hard line, picked the line, ran very well, was fully aware of what was going on around him. And a beautiful little half-blind offload. It was a cracking try. So there was a lot of good things on show too.
Yeah. Be interested to see who plays it out half for them, Joe. Be interested to hear Keith. Because Tyler Blaindall has not looked as confident or as assured this season so far as he did last. Maybe his goal kicking has not been right, and it's been affecting his overall form. Ian Keighley
kicked well, didn't he?
He kicked superb. He landed his first six kicks, only missed the seventh from the touchline. Gorgeous cut-out pass for JJ Hanrahan to come on to for the try. Looked really composed. I mean, if Barnsley gives him the man of the match, that's an accolade in itself. His general at half play. And it'd be very interesting to see JJ Hanrahan get a go there as well.
Has JJ Hanrahan said where he's coming back to play, or is he just happy to be in the team now and contribute where he can?
Well, he's always wanted to play out half. I know, that is his position. What do you think, Keith? Who will they go there?
I think it's been noted this time he hasn't said anything.
He said
it's going to Northampton, and one of the reasons for not staying in Munster, but it's been very quiet on the way back, which I think pretty much is as it should be. I have to say, if you looked at Keighley's performance the other day, it was fantastic.
Wasn't it?
And I'm delighted to see it. He's a really good guy.
Yeah.
He became a father for the first time that week. He was going around the place with a smile on his face. He then played accordingly. Blaindall hasn't hit his traps.
No.
And I have to say that for me, that Conor Murray has such a huge impact and influence on who plays at 10.
Mm-hmm.
And Blaindall, I think, suffers outside Duncan Williams and hasn't played as well outside him and doesn't seem to play with that level of confidence. And that could be, we still forget that Blaindall hasn't played a huge amount of rugby. Most of his adult career has been injured. So last year he got through the bones of a season, which was excellent when Munster needed him most. And I wouldn't be writing him off just yet. And I think he has skills and capabilities that would keep him number one, but he needs to be playing with Conor Murray because he just doesn't get the ball where he wants it. That's what it looks like for me, and his confidence seems to drop a little bit.
Keith, such a good point you make, because on the Lions tour, not many people take cognizance of the fact that I'm pretty sure I'm right in saying, just off the top of my head, that Dan Biggar and Robbie Henshaw never once played outside Conor Murray in the entire tour, not even for a minute.
Yeah.
It has a ripple effect.
Well, the Lions is incredible for that. You know, there's elements of luck that go
huge
to your selection in the first week or the first match or the combinations that are there or the opposition that you're playing or the weather conditions. I mean, it's you'd like to say that the best players are always playing in the tests, but they're not. And they're not for a variety of reasons. They have a dip of confidence because it's lashing, raining, and the hooker can't throw the ball in, or you know, the scrum is under huge pressure, and your back rows can't get off, and suddenly they don't get an opportunity. That's what pretty much happens. And like one of the things we've been very fortunate with is in terms of Conor Murray, his standard of play is of such a high standard all the time. He may not absolutely set the world in light all the time, but his level of functionality in every game is at a very high standard. It's up at sort of 80% of his game, and he goes up higher on the really big games, and that's a mark of a great player.
His strike rate of breaks or snipes into clean breaks or tries is remarkable. He just seems to know exactly when to, almost Reece Webb like.
Someone should tell Graham Henry, if I remember correctly, from the summer.
Is it time, lads, to stop the try against the bottom of the post? Because I was looking at Williams.
It looks a bit naffle, right? Doesn't
well,
it?
Trying to, he had to go into an offside position to stop Conor Murray score a try. That's wrong. That's out of kilter with the spirit of the law.
Yeah, I never thought of it, but yeah, I'd agree. Yeah, totally. Yeah.
We will see how they go this Saturday. That's the Aviva, Munster, Leinster. And then obviously it's Ulster, Connacht on the Friday night. We talked a bit about these two teams on Monday with Owen Redden. Ulster lost, strangely, given how well they've started the season, away to Zebre. And we talked a little bit about the work Conor O'Shea might be doing there. And Connacht, Jerry, put in probably their best performance of their season thus
no
far.
Question. No question. One of the games, probably the Pro 14 game of the season.
They
was
lost
the Scarlets and Connacht. It was a spellbinding game. Almost, it was the best game of the Pro 14 this season. And they played some really good rugby. Do you know what it was? They had great conditions to play in for the first time this season.
Right,
that Glasgow game first up was just played in a monsoon and wind and everything else. And they've just had very bad conditions to play in. And ironically, Connacht have now become a good weather team.
Yeah.
And they benefit from the conditions. They had a real go. Their line speed and defence was very good. All that being said, they made a few mistakes, defensive reads out wide to concede tries. But then the Scarlets are a really potent side. They really took it to them and they probably deserved at least 2 points out of the game. It was a shame. And they would have Jack Carty near that last conversion, although Jack played really well. So it was good to see, because they will take a lot out of that. I think they'll probably take more out of that than any of their performances to date, including the win over the Kings at home. The problem for them is that Ulster will be smarting after losing to Zebre. You know, I've been up to the Kingspan, or what it was, Ravenhill, in a lot of times over the years, and there would be a degree of shame over losing to Zebre of all teams, and they will have been smarting all week. I think Les Kiss mentioned on Monday at the European Cup launch, there was something like 45 errors in terms of missed tackles and handling mistakes. They won't do that again. Their team will be slightly different, and it's probably bad news for Connacht that Ulster did lose that game. The last time Connacht won in Belfast, JFK was elected President of the United States that very same month.
It was all kicking off in the Irish Times this week, Keith. So, Gerry Thornley, it's time to stand up to the English clubs.
There you go. Go on, Jerry.
So we knew there was trouble on the horizon here. So some of the points you make, you're talking about the launch of the new European season on Monday. You're making the point this is the fourth year of this launch. We're into the fourth season of it.
EPCR, the organisation bequeathed to us by primarily the Anglo-French Club Alliance. Yeah, that broke up the old organisation.
Yeah, after what you call the bully boy tactics of the English and French clubs. You make an interesting point. Along the lines of the European Champions League, one of the promises was there would be five commercial partners rather than one title sponsor, a la the Heineken Cup, was one of the big promises. And I hadn't realised this, but you make the point, with a full four seasons on, no less, there are still only two commercial partners, Heineken and Turkish Airlines. Imagine the outcry from the PRL, LNR, various club owners in England and France, along with sections of the UK media, if the old ERC had so spectacularly failed to deliver on its promises. Instead, there has been barely a squeak. I hadn't realised this, I have to say. And you were looking at the whole success commercially of the tournament and the influence that the English clubs have had generally across your piece, and you're not too happy.
Well, no, I'm just sick of being lectured to them by them. They're saying that the Six Nations has to be cut. They were the ones who cut it from 10 to 7 weeks. Now they want it cut by another week for England, France to play in one of the fallow weeks. They want the Lions Tour abbreviate from 10 to 8 matches. We've talked already about how you know, lucky you are to make a certain selection early on the tour or not in a Lions Tour. There's no way on earth that the Lions would have drawn that series with the All Blacks without each and every one of those 10 matches, without those six games before the first. They needed every one of them to get up to speed to face the All Blacks. They never would have drawn the series, and that was a fantastic series. But I know a lot of people back home in Ireland found the Sky Sports coverage unbearable, over the top, but it was a great, great series to be out there at. If you were at it, any Irish person, or along with any Scot, Welsh or English person, would have said it was one of the tours of their lifetime. And very often these people who go on these tours do save for years to go on them, and they're epic sporting contests, as the entire three test matches. And I'm just sick of the English clubs dictating to everybody else. Like, the Premiership is 100 years The Leinsters are 100 years older, give or take a few weeks. The Six Nations or Five Nations or Four Nations is about the same. And that they're dictating all these, and they can't even run their own ship that well. If you look at their financial losses, Wasps lost 3.8 million sterling, Harlequins 2.2, Newcastle 2.1, London Irish 1.9, Bath 1.2, Sale 1.1, Gloucester and Leicester trading losses.
This was all just last year.
Yeah, yeah. Worcester also have lost about 16 million over the last 3 years. They're up for Sale. Saracens lost 3.3 million last year, and they're the standard bearers, and they've lost something like over 36 million in the last 7 years. Yeah. And here they are lecturing the rest of the world. I just wish more people would stand up to them.
I know you two want to talk about the financial, potentially bubble is not too strong a word to use, about the English and French leagues. We'll come back to that another week. So, but on the European competition, on the EPCR, the new body running the European competition, why, Gerry, have they not been able to get the promised five commercial partners, for instance?
Well, I think they may have overreached and maybe thought they had a bigger product to sell than they actually have. But well, certainly the split TV thing didn't work. That didn't help at all. But that was bequeathed because of the English clubs going off and signing a deal with BT, which sold rights to the European Cup matches they had no right to sell.
It's a really, really difficult sponsorship market at the present moment in time, and on big ones where a lot of the old existing banking and insurance sponsorships had come to an end. They'd been in there for 4 or 5 years. Suddenly there's the back end of the crash, and all those big financial institutions are looking to position their brands exactly properly, and in a new organization that is a little bit uncertain, that's going to be incredibly difficult to try and get. I mean, I have to say, Gerry, I think it's an excellent article, really, really well written, touches all the points that really need to be touched on. I think, and we've had this discussion before, that the European Cup, the Heineken Cup, needed to change somewhat because it was slightly unfair. But it's gone to a position now where they've thrown everything out, as opposed to making minor changes. This wanted to be totally. And basically, the clubs in France and the clubs in England are holding an awful lot of the game to ransom in terms of what it is that they're doing, in terms of even the salaries that are being given. And I know that you talk to supporters like all the time, and who get really upset. Why don't you afford this guy? Why don't you go for that guy? Because you want to be able to make certain you have a club at the end. And it's only because somebody's picking up the tab in this that these clubs are able to survive. It's just because they're magnificently wealthy. But it doesn't work or function as a viable commercial business. It only does because of somebody writing a cheque at the background. And that makes it incredibly difficult. The longer that they continue to do that, it makes it incredibly difficult in all the other clubs around the world. And one of the great things that Ireland has is the manner in which it's looking after its players, the limits that are being put on the number of games that the top international players are playing. What we have here is working. It's working well. You'd stand behind it as being something that's a good thing to have.
And Keith, going back to the point you made a moment ago, so we're 3 years into the Champions Cup now, starting a fourth season. If you could get a magic wand, you're saying they threw away everything with the Heineken Cup. What quick changes would you make to the current format?
Well, I don't think there's any quick change you can make at the present moment in time. There's probably only two options. There's one, there's the nuclear option, which is try and see if you can do something without the French and the English clubs, and try and get the RFU and the French Federation to do something on their own, which would be throwing out a huge amount of history for all the teams. That's a nuclear option. But you know what? You may have to look at it at some stage. And the other one is to try and bring those two bodies into the fold, either into the fold of the Six Nations or into the fold properly of World Rugby, to try and have some level of partnership that can make this thing work, because at the moment it's stretching everything else at the seams.
So again, for people kind of hearing of all these bodies, and we've got these all acronyms and various names floating about, we're talking about the English Premiership, their league, and the French league. They need to be brought in and inside the tent. They're operating solely with their own league in mind and screw everything else. Is that kind of their outlook?
They're operating on an entirely different financial model. And actually, if we just go straight down to finances and nothing else, their model is just entirely different. It is about trying to get as much money possibly into the game. And they're paying the players, the salaries of the players are going up very aggressively in the last 3 years. They're enticing players from the other side of the world in the middle of their pomp. So you have Cruden coming over and playing in Montpellier when really he should be, you know, fighting it out with Beauden Barrett for the 10 jersey and in New Zealand. And you have a couple of hundred players from South Africa playing in Europe and Japan, which makes it very, very hard to... destabilizes the international game to some degree. So it's, but it's like they're looking at it, and this is their job, and they're trying to make their job work as well as they possibly can. But actually, in the middle of Jerry's article, he explains that even though they've got a lot more money coming in from television and other things, that these clubs are making a fairly big loss. And how sustainable is that?
Also in France, there's meant to be a salary cap of supposedly 13 million. Nobody can possibly believe that Montpellier, with the arrival of Cruden and Pienaar and Bickermulz, are anywhere near that salary cap. Right. But that being said, I suppose you have to say that the English and French club owners have helped to ensure greater financial reimbursement for the players that otherwise would not have been the case. Give them that credit, which is a good thing.
Of course, but that's why there's a nuclear option which nobody would ever want and nobody actually discusses. But the other one is, how do you bring the English clubs and the French clubs into the fold of world rugby? That's where it needs to be, because at the moment it's an argument, it's a fight, nearly a one-way fight.
And how hard are they pushing the English and French leagues, Jerry, to condense the Six Nations further into a six-week tournament?
Well, they're pushing hard. This is their next big goal. This is what they want. Reduce.
Is a week that important to them?
You wouldn't have thought so, but yeah, seemingly so. And, you know, what really, really annoys me about all of this is every time they do this, they keep talking about player welfare. And yet, in the same breath, they talk about a September to June season. And they talk about condensing the Six Nations into 5 or 6 weeks. And everybody knows, talk to any players, that they're like 5 World Cup quarterfinal, semi-final matches in a row. And they're just very hard to take, even over a 7 week period. Players are just drained physically. And if you run them off back to back to back, there will be more injuries. We've seen that in World Cups. And so it just doesn't tally with player welfare whatsoever. And I just don't think they should be allowed to do this. You know, I think World Rugby and the Six Nations just stand up to them. And I think when it comes to player contracts and the players' associations, there's been threats of strike from Joe Marler and Billy Vunipolo and the Players Association in England, because they haven't been consulted. So much for player welfare. They haven't been consulted about this September to June season or condensing the Six Nations. That, you know, they build it into their contracts when they sign the next contracts. They will be released for Lions tours, and they will be released for international windows, and they'll be released for Six Nations matches. And you know, furthermore, they will play a set number of games per year, 25, 26, 27, whatever it is. I mean, they have the power to do this, because, if, believe me, the players will revolt if they're told by their English club owners, you're not going on a Lions tour.
Yeah.
It's funny. I was with Ian McGeachan a few weeks ago, and his thought was, and he talked to a couple, and Sam Warburton, and he talked to a couple of the players around it, and he said, the Lions survives if players want to go on the Lions. And it was a very kind of simplistic line, but it's true. The guys want to go on it because...
Much as ever.
Yeah. It is that difficult, and it is an honour.
Lads, we'll leave it there. Enjoy the rugby at the weekend. Next week, we'll be looking ahead to European action. Thanks, Keith.
Cheers, lads.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Jerry Thornley of the Irish Times. Thank you, Jerry.
Thank you.
Off the Ball on News Talk. In association with AIR. Watch Formula One Grand Prix action this month live on AIR Sports.